tonight, the title or kind of what we're talking about is just like, we've done a lot of this already, but we kind of wanted to bring it all together before we head off in another direction next week. We'll be a little less practical. But one thing we talk about premarital counseling a lot is just how to be married. Now, a lot of y'all been married longer than we have, so, you know, I'm not presuming to say that we're better at this. And this might be a good night to have some extra discussion, too, if you have something to chip in on. But this is just what I call a practical approach to being married. And, again, I do feel like, you know, the day-to-day life, the day-to-day approach to being married is marriage. This is what it is, and this is the stuff that one section of Song of Solomon says, you know, catch the little foxes that are ruining the vineyard. And that's a principle that I think about a lot, is that sometimes it's little things that creep in that destroy things. It's not always something big. And so
it's like the drip on the rock.
Yeah, it's like the drip on the rock. Or like, for example, our deck got destroyed by a tree a few weeks ago. And that feels like, oh man, a tree destroyed my deck. It's the worst, you know, that's terrible damage, and it's not great for the deck. But when we pulled out the deck, we discovered some rot that had happened, and that was slowly over time, right? So that was actually a bigger issue than anything. And so sometimes the big stuff feels like the issue, but it's actually something smaller that's a bigger issue. So, So, long story short, the little foxes can sneak in and kind of ruin things. So I guess tonight we're going to talk about lots of different things. I've got sort of five practical things to help us be married. Yeah, all right. Also, I will just say, let's make it six. Here's number one. Always say something about your spouse's birthday on their birthday. Today's Whitney's birthday, so happy birthday, Whitney.
Brought us food. And did you do something good for this morning?
He forgot.
What?
My birthday for a minute.
Oh, I did for a second, yeah. Mm-hmm. And then I played golf. Happy birthday, Whitney.
That's great. But he took me to lunch yesterday.
I took him to lunch yesterday. But I did say, let me just make this very, very clear. I did say, what does your schedule look like on Wednesday? I'll gladly take you to lunch on Wednesday if you'd like for me to. She's like, I'm too busy. And I was like, well, if you're so busy that you can't go to lunch, I guess I'll play golf. I mean, you know, like, it wasn't like, I mean, I did give her the first dibs. You know? That's why I'm teaching this class, fellas. Okay. Do what? Yeah, that's right. So practical approach to be married. Okay, here's number one. We talked about it a billion times. There's nothing more important than humility in the day-to-day of being married. So just the basic process of counting others as better than yourself. And I do think nothing erodes a marriage quicker than keeping score.
Yeah, that's good.
So I feel like some of our biggest issues, my biggest issues, my biggest problems in marriage have come from me being like resentful or like, well, if you would do this better, I would do this better, you know, or whatever. And so it takes humility, I think, again, to just regularly in the day-to-day of life say, like, I'm not the most important thing in the world. And I think that's really hard to do. I mean, I think we all know this, that we're bent towards thinking we're the most important thing in the world.
Yeah.
Maybe y'all are more humble than me naturally, but right now you're like, I don't think I'm that important, but like, you know, let somebody like ruin your day and then you become the most important person in the world, you know, and get stuck in traffic, you know? You're like, what are all these people doing here?
Yeah.
My day matters more than theirs. And so, so humility, I think, is really important.
I think you can also look at it on the flip side, that like it also, for me, I don't know for you, but it also sometimes, it sounds so weird, but it takes a level of humility to like be very clear in your expectations.
Okay.
Do you know what I'm saying? Like,
flush that out.
Well, sometimes it's just like, I would rather just like either not spell out. My expectations like, hey, I expect
okay, yeah.
this of you. I expect our day to look like this.
Right.
And I had a, this is so funny. So I was out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it was like, while, like during the time we were having this class, I was having dinner with a colleague and she was, we were talking about marriage or whatever. And she said that one thing that they do on, in the mornings, like every morning they have like little kids, is like, what does your vision of today look like?
Yeah.
And like, they will say like, my vision of today looks like this. Like, I will go to work. I will go do this after work. Like, you know, and then they'll say, you know, what does your vision of today look like? And so it kind of like helps level set. And so, like, that takes some, like, extra planning or whatever. But I think, like, naming expectations is an important thing.
Yeah,
and I think sometimes that
I can remember we went through a season where, like, you would be upset about something. And I was like, hey, what's up? And it would turn out you wanted me to help with something or do something. And I would say, well, you didn't tell. Like, you didn't tell me you wanted that. You're
right.
Like, you should just know. You know, or what? Like, you should just know. And maybe.
I think I would say you should just look.
Or, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Like, you know, like, yeah. So, long story short, though, I think you're right that it does take some humility to say, hey, not everybody thinks like me.
Yeah.
We're not naturally going to line up on
that's right.
That. Almost. I mean, you know, just we're going to have to figure some stuff out. Yeah, that's good. So, that's just number one, and that just. I know we've said that every single week, multiple times. But again, I really do think the regularity of just thinking, am I having the mind of Christ right now before you get torqued up about something? Is this really a moral issue or do I just have a control?
Preference.
Is it a preference? Is it just, am I just mad they're not doing what I want them to do right now?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, like I have to ask that question like with our kids sometimes. Like,
yeah,
is this something that matters or am I just mad about something else or am I just thinking they should be like me or not be like me or what, you know, whatever, you know, I just should be careful about. All right. There's that. All right. Number two, I would say another piece of the puzzle for having a practical approach to being married would be this. Focus on the positive. Focus on the positive. I'm a natural born griper from a people of griping. We just like to gripe. I mean, you think that's fair?
Yeah.
We're just gripers. And I think a lot of people gripe in general, but I'm just a natural griper. And so I have a tendency to gripe. So I think it's easy to spend, I have to work on this a lot, like focusing on positive things, like focusing on the and you don't think so?
I mean, well, that's different than where I thought you were going to go with this. Because I'm typically more like the pessimistic person of the two of us. You're more, to me, you're like relentlessly positive.
Glass half full?
Always.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
Always.
Yeah. Why would we even want it to be all the way full?
I'm like,
it's perfect right where it is.
Full,
you know,
it's no glass.
It could spill so much easier if it was all the way to the top. Like, we want it right there in the middle. You know, like, I'm like trying to find a way to make it pop. Yeah, that is true. But I gripe too.
Yeah, you do gripe, but I think but typically.
Let me just say this. Maybe I should say it like this then. I have to fight against griping and I have to work. But what I have to do is to work at not only articulating negative things.
Yeah.
Because I feel like we've had moments where you're like, the only thing I've heard from you today is what I've done wrong.
Yeah.
You know.
Oh, that's true. It's the 10-1 rule.
Yeah,
or whatever it is.
But then, right, like, the only thing we've talked about today is, like, what the other person's done wrong or whatever.
Yeah.
So, but I've also, in just marriage counseling and talking to people over the years, people just tend to spend a lot of time, it's so easy to fixate on the bad things.
Yeah.
Is the point that I'm trying to make. It's really easy. Whatever it is that about your spouse that's annoying you that day or whatever it is, it's so easy to focus on those things or what they don't do or what they don't provide for you or the things you wish they would change, all those, you know, all those different kinds of things. And I've heard there are people that have those kinds of things on their mind about their spouse. I can't relate to that. But whatever any of those things are, right, it's easy to spend all your time thinking about that. And I talk to people about that sometimes where it's sort of like, you know, they're like this, and they're like this, and they do this, and they do this. And I always like to say, well, tell me like why you got married. Like, what are the things that drew you together? And then they're like, well, there's this and 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 this. And I'm like, well, you need to focus on that. There's good stuff here, you know? Like, every situation comes with good and bad. That's just life. And I talk about it on our staff a lot about, I talk about it in terms of exhaust. Like, most negative qualities are exhaust from a positive quality. Not always, but somebody will say, golly, they're just so disorganized, or this, I'm a disorganized person. But I'm also simultaneously joyful and spontaneous.
That's right.
Right? And I don't know. I could be wrong. I've not met a lot of spontaneous people with perfectly organized desks. You know what I mean? And it just doesn't always happen that way. So Whitney is very, things are to be done a certain way, and we follow rules and that kind of thing. But then also, though, she's very industrious and gets a lot of things done, and that's something I find really wonderful about her. So do we have to walk the long way to go in the right door at the grocery store? Yes, we do. like, you know, it's just, this is the door. This is the end door. This is the door you go in. It doesn't matter. Doors were made for man. Man wasn't made for doors, you know, is what I'm saying. And no, we're going the right way. Do I have to do it? Yes, but the benefits, right, are what I try to focus on, not the things that just annoy me a little bit. Does that make sense? Do you have anything to add to that? Does that make sense to y'all, what I'm talking about there? So there's always, I've said this in interviews before, like, obviously you have some level of giftedness or you wouldn't be here right now. We wouldn't be interviewing you if we didn't see your gifts. But what's your exhaust? Like, what are the negatives that come from whatever your giftedness is? And I think that's what I would want to think about a lot. And it's what we should think about some in our marriage as well, right? Like, not only for ourselves, we should think about, what is my exhaust here? What negative things am I pumping into this marriage? But when we think about our spouse, we should think, okay, what are the things I like?
Yeah.
The corresponding things I like. There's something good there.
Yeah.
Are you with me together, you know? And so I say focus on the positive and revisit regularly, I think, like the things you love about your spouse. So I would just say, I would take opportunities to write some of this stuff out. This is going to sound weird to some folks here, maybe. I don't know. Maybe y'all are writers. But I will sometimes, like on an anniversary or something like that, in a card or whatever, or a letter sometimes, just take time to write out all the things I like. You know, just like a long, like, I like this about you and this and this and this and this. And it's not just good for her, because then she hears all the things I like about her. But it's good for me to be reminded of all the things I like about Whitney. And it's a lot of things. A lot of stuff. And most of the stuff I like. Most of the stuff, yeah. Yeah, those stay here. Yeah.
Those are not written.
Yeah, those are, yeah.
Those are spoken
all the way.
Loudly.
But I do think it's easy. The other thing I'll say is focus on the positive is important, because I think we've talked about this already, but it's important to remember what I heard one person call one time the rule of tens, that anything you hear that's negative, you weigh 10 times more than something you hear that's positive. So it takes really 10 positive comments to overcome one negative comment. And I don't know if y'all are like this or not, but man, I will hear one complaint about something and I will dwell on that. You know what I mean? I mean, I'm such a, this is the worst, it's all coming to an end, everything's over. I mean, you know, I just really, negative things really weigh on me. And so sometimes, like, we'll say to one another at different times, like, you've only said negative things today to me. And I'm like, I said like 27 positive things. And 3 negative things, right? But they outweigh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it works that way. So I think that's something to remember in how we use our words, right? Is just, if you can articulate positive things, I think that's important.
Yeah.
Anything to add to that?
And I think, like, a humility in be willing to kind of like receive.
Yeah.
Like something that is negative. Like, I think there's a way to say something that's negative in a way that's Christ-like, obviously.
Sure.
But there's also a way to receive something that's a critique.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. I mean, what I'm not trying to say is that we never address our issues.
Yeah.
We have to. You alluded to this earlier, but how do you, Whitney, as someone who has said in this very moment tonight that you thought you're skewed a little more glass half empty.
Sure.
Than the corresponding person. Mm-hmm. I do struggle sometimes.
That's a nice segue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Point in the positive. Yeah,
you have said that. Not me. What are some ways you feel like for someone who may, like, I sometimes will say something like, I have said before, fairly or unfairly, I'm not sure, but like, feels like everything you've said today, not even just about me, but just like everything has felt like, yeah, but, you know, or whatever.
Yeah.
So how do you work with that? What do you think is a good balance between?
What do you mean how do I work with that?
Like,
flesh that out.
Yeah, like, talk a little bit about that dynamic between us and like how you work.
Like,
on
how
that.
Do I not be like that?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's it.
I wish I knew.
Right, that's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to put you on the spot so you'll come up. So.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Hey, let's hit pause real quick. Cole.
Yeah, I think that's really.
You've gotten better at it, is what I'm trying. You really have. Like,
yeah.
It's gotten better.
So yeah.
In general, like, and this might be like a men and women kind of thing, but like, in general, I feel like if something has happened, like, I'm going to carry that, like, with me, even throughout the next things I'm doing. So, like, if there's something that's weighing heavy, it's hard to, like, separate myself. It's like, the men are, like, whatever, and women are, like, spaghetti, or that. Remember that book we read that time?
Yeah.
Like, you can, like,
Branch
just
like.
Like,
he didn't read it, Katie. Do you remember that book I read that I told you about that time, Brent? That's what.
Yeah.
Is it you think it's, all right, let's pull the room. Is that a men-women thing, or is it a personality-based thing, you think?
It's personality. Definitely, I know, like, plenty of guys there.
I mean, I do know some men that can't. Yeah. But I think generally, I mean, there's a reason that the analogy works, right? Spaghetti and waffles. Like, I think that there's a reason that it works. Like, I don't think that you're fully able to, like, I mean, if something happens over here, I don't think always you're able to leave it over here and not let it affect here.
I feel like I'm better at it because of my job at times.
Yeah.
Because there are times when, I mean, like, you got to go preach. What do you, you know, I mean, you can't mope up there. All right, everybody. you know, you kind of have to put, you have to do it. Some, I mean, you just.
Yeah.
You know?
It's always like a spectrum. Like, you're on one of the kinds of.
Yeah, I agree.
She's probably, for me, like, I'm probably, like, way on the, almost to the point of, like, just being cold. Like, I don't know.
He said that.
Most unemotional person ever.
But that's funny, because, like fear, Matt is the more emotional of the two of us. Like,
no,
I'm not an emotional person at all. But I can be more like, something I was at work, and I'm like, it carries, you know, like 9:30 at night, and I was like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, well, this happened at work.
Once you start feeling, boy, you can't stop, you know, and I start feeling something, I'm like, I've been doing this all the time, I just shut her down. You know, this is another day, you know, I feel it all.
Yeah.
I've gone through some seasons, too, though, where I felt like.
I will say this, in situations like that, where I've been, because I'm, my tendency, when I do, when something has happened and I'm like tempted to carry it, I'm very tempted to carry it on my own. Right? And I've found that, like, if I just, like, tell you, like, I'm almost, like, the kind of person where if it's, like, something bad, like, if you just don't speak it, we don't have to, like, acknowledge that it's there. And that comes from all sorts of stuff. But, like, if I just, I've come to realize, like, if I do share it with you, because I do live with a pastoral counselor all the time. Great. Like, it's, yeah, really good. It helps, right? Like, it helps to, like, sometimes I'll be like, this is the biggest deal ever, and I'll tell you, and you're like, Whitney, that is not a big deal at all. Like, that is not a thing. And
I'll never forget, I didn't realize how different, I mean, this has been within the last several years that I remember one time, like, you were like, it gets better, so please, everybody don't judge me for what I'm about to say, but she's usually, like, real snippy and, like, just angry, kind of, with me, and I was like, what have I done wrong? You're like, nothing. What are you, I'm acting, this is how I act. I'm like, yeah, that's exactly how we act. And, you know, he's just like, stop it. You know, anyway, so, like, finally, I'm like, what are you, what, I've done something. You're like, not done anything. And finally, I'm like, what is, like, what's the problem? She's like, I don't want to say it.
I don't even know what you're going to say.
And I'm like, well, just, what is it? She's like, I've just been sort of overwhelmed at work today. And I'm like, my gosh, why is that embarrassing? Like, because she's like, that feels like I'm admitting weakness and, like, like showing there's a problem. It sounds like I'm weak. It sounds like I can't handle it. And I'm like, well, nobody can, like, everybody feels overwhelmed all the time. Like, that's a perfectly normal thing to do. Like, just tell me that instead of getting mad at me, you know, or whatever. And so, like, we just process and handle things really differently, I feel like. Yeah. And so I do think some of that makes, like, and Whitney's also very concrete. Everything's very black and white, very concrete. Yes. And so I think for people that are very concrete and very black and white, and I'm very abstract in a lot of ways, in a lot of ways, and in other ways I'm not, but I'm generally speaking a little more like that. So for people like that, I think they can come across to people like me as I think you can come across to me as negative when you don't see yourself as being negative at all. Like, I'll say, oh man, I love the way that looks. And you're like, yeah, except for that color or something, or except for that.
Yeah, like, if I don't immediately, you're just like, oh my gosh, yeah, I love, like, we were sitting at Deli 101 yesterday, and he looked up and was like, look at that mirror, that's such a great mirror. And I was like, yeah. He did not like that.
I mean, he was a little, I don't think he was as neutral as that.
It wasn't.
You're like, I mean, I guess. And I was like,
it was a beautiful mirror.
Apparently, I have the worst taste in mirrors of anyone that's ever lived. Like, I've never even seen a mirror before. Like, I mean, it's just like, that's the worst. I was like, gosh, I mean, I'm not going to buy it. I don't want my wallet out. You just, sometimes I'm like, you can just, I want to be like, do you know how many times a day that somebody says something to me that's like so weird sound that I'm like, man, how about that? You know, like, you just sometimes have to go with the flow. Anyway, none of y'all ever, but I know.
What you're saying, just try to lean, you know, like, recognize where you're in the extreme and at least try to, like,
lean in a little bit. But yeah, like, Whitney's not going to say, yes, I love that if she doesn't actually love it.
No, I will not.
She's going to explain exactly how she loves it, where I'm, like, I'm going to just say, man, I love that.
I won't fake
and
it
then later,
I can't fake it.
And, yeah.
I couldn't fake it if I wanted. I couldn't.
If you can ever play poker with Whitney with money that doesn't belong to both of us, you'd have a good day. So I think just bearing in mind, focusing on the pop. But let me just back up to the original intent of this. Just in your own heart and mind, it's easy to spend most of your time thinking about what's not right. I'll give an example outside our marriage. There was a time in the early days here at the church that I was kind of in my office moping. I'd had a real tough year, and I was praying, and I was telling the Lord. I mean, it's just, like, so funny to me that I was ever even in a place like this. But I was telling the Lord, like, man, I wish, God, I wasn't, like, trying to leave or whatever, but I was afraid I might have, I didn't know if I would necessarily get fired, but I was just afraid it was going to go so poorly that I needed to move on. And some people will call that running a church in the ground. And so that's what I thought. I was like, there's a chance that I'm the worst person at this ever. And I've got several letters in a folder here that attest to that fact. So I was sitting there and I was like, God, if you know, if I have to do something else, if you'll just give me a church that's like this, it's like this, it's like this. And I was listing all this stuff out. And then I'm not a big audible voice guy, and I don't like to say God said something that's not in the Bible necessarily, but I think the Lord brought a thought to my mind, and it was like, well, why don't you try to make this church that way, you know? And instead of focusing on all the negative stuff that you don't have, why don't you work to try to get there? And I call that literally the day God withered my gourd. And I just was like, all right, let's do it, you know, and felt a real sense of fresh calling there. So I think we can do that in our marriages as well, right? Yeah. Instead of saying, oh, wish there were, focus on like the good things, focus on the positive things. Yeah. Okay, number three, strategize the big stuff. I feel like we try to run and gun offense on a lot of stuff in marriage. Like, and this goes back to that sort of idea of romanticism that's prevalent in our culture. But there's a sense in which the most strategic we need to be in our like, we're strategic at work, we're strategic like with our money, we're strategic with all kinds of different things. But then we feel like when it comes to particularly our faith and our marriages, that it just needs to all just come naturally, you know. It just needs to all be easy breezy, and we just kind of float there, it feels like at times. Not everybody, but think about strategizing the big stuff, having a strategy for it, like you would in a business or whatever else. You're coming together as a household and saying, what's our goal here? What's our vision for this? How do we, and then I think when you have, I mean, if you think about it right now, if I went around the room and said, well, how should a church spend its money? You know, we would probably have lots of different good ideas on how a church should spend its money, right? So if every week when the offering came in, if I came back out on Sunday morning and said, all right, y'all, how should we spend this money? Everybody would be like, well, we need to make sure our staff gets paid. I'd be like, amen to that. All right, next. Well, we need to do this. And then eventually we would all sort of like have all these ideas. What do? We come together and we have a committee and we have others and we put a budget together that tries to take all the different strategies that we have and we try to spend that money in a way that we don't have to think through it every time. So we have this budget put together. So think about the big stuff, and we're going to talk about the big stuff now that can sometimes rock marriages. I think one of the best ways to get along about big stuff is to have a shared strategy. Yeah. We've got a vision, we've got a plan for it, and it's something we came together on ahead of time. And so if somebody's like, I don't know about this, you say, nope, remember, we made this plan together. We did this together. This is what we're doing. And that's why we have a plan. So strategizing the big stuff. The biggest thing, I think, in our marriages is faith. You know, our relationship with the Lord. So strategize your relationship with the Lord. I would encourage people to take stock of where your family is in terms of your faith. I think sometimes when I talk about the importance of church, sometimes people might assume that I think church is important because I'm a pastor. It's like special pleading, you know, like, of course you should come to church. I'm the preacher. But I'm a preacher because I think church is important. Like, there's other stuff you can do in ministry. You know, I've got friends that do all kinds of important, good things in ministry. But I think the centerpiece of God's plan, God's gospel plan for the world, is what he's doing through the local church. So I serve the church because I think church is important, is the point that I'm trying to make. So I'm not just trying to beg you to do more here. But think through strategically, maybe every 6 months, every year, evaluate, are we happy with our church involvement? Mm-hmm. Are we happy with how much we gave to the church? And not just to the church, but other causes as well. Are we happy with how often our kids are able to be at church? You know, I'm not a big, like, make everybody feel guilty about how often they're at church kind of guy. There are seasons of life and there are challenges of life. But, you know, one metric I would use is to say, do we feel like that the time, effort, money, et cetera, that we put into church reflects a meaningful investment in the central piece of God's plan for the world through the gospel, and he's building his church through the gospel. So do we feel like that's noticeable to our children as well? Yeah. You know, does it feel like church is a priority and a sacrifice? I ask my kids from time to time, like, you know, you hear all these stories about pastors' kids and how they heard all these horror stories about how they'll resent the church or resent the time their parents spend at the church and everything. And So I'll check in with my kids every once in a while and just say, hey, is it hard to be my child because I'm a pastor? I have to add qualifications, you know. Just this one thing. I don't want to know the other answer. Is it hard being the pastor's kid or whatever? And one of my kids recently said, well, they were mad about something they had to do church-wise. And not because they don't like the thing. It was one part of it they don't like, and they were fearful about it. And so I said, is there anything hard? And they said, well, just the only thing is just that since you're the pastor, we always have to do everything in church. And I was like, hold on just a second. That's not because I'm a pastor. Like, that's because of mine and mom's thoughts on church. Do you know what I mean? Like, I was like, we don't live by other people's convictions as a family. So like, if we didn't feel like it was essential for you guys to participate, have a very high participation rate in church, we wouldn't make you do that just because everybody thinks we should because I'm a pastor. You know, I don't think every child has to be involved in every single thing at church. I don't think it's possible. I don't think it's always healthy. I said, y'all miss stuff from time to time, but if we can make it happen, we want it. And I was actually glad to know that she noticed.
Yeah.
That it's like, no, it takes a really big excuse for us to miss something. That's the point I'm trying to make. So that's, strategize faith as a family. Okay, kids, like how you think about children, how many children you want to have, how you want to educate your children, how you want to raise your children. I think having a strategy on raising children is really important because then it's not just flying by the seat of your pants on every decision. That's sort of right. Like we have principles that we go by and we have to hash some things out sometimes.
Yeah.
But, you know, we had this concept introduced to us in seminary, this idea of kind of an upside down pyramid. As far as how much freedom you give children, and they're like, we tend to do a regular pyramid where when they're real little, we give them all the freedom because the mistakes they make are really minimal. And then as they get older, they get less freedom, you know, to become teenagers. He's like, you really need to flip that upside down because if you give them less freedom when they're younger, then as they get older, they'll learn how to make better decisions and that sort of thing. They'll be better. So that's an example of, like, generally speaking, some ways that we, just a strategy that we incorporated together. Now, exactly what level of freedom that, I mean, I feel like I've known people that took that way too far, I think. But by and large, those kinds of things have been important to us because we want to be able to, hopefully, by God's grace, trust our kids when we can't see them all the time when they're doing stuff.
Yeah, that's right.
Anything to add to that so far?
I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but like practically, like, you hear people talk about this all the time, but we really do like prioritize like spending time together as a family, especially around like dinner time and, weekends and things like that. And so I think that that's really important. I don't know if you're going to talk about this, but like I preach to my kids all the time about their relationships with each other.
Oh yeah, you do.
Because like if I hear just like even the slightest sense of like sarcasm or like yeah, I hate that. And so like I always try to remind my kids, you know.
Well, I will say sarcasm is kind of a love language for us.
But But especially like if it's like if there's like if Watsy has a friend in the car with us and if Ford says something and Watsy kind of tries like yeah.
Oh man, I hate big dogs.
Oh, shut up.
Yeah, man, I don't put up with any big dogs.
But I try to remind our kids all the time. I'm like, more than likely, when you grow up, like the people in this car right now are the people that you will vacation with. They're the people that you're going to commune with. This is your unit. And friends are great. We love friends. But this unit here is important, right? The bonds that we have here are important. So, and like our kids are like, we've not even really like verbally been like, we're all eating dinner as a family or anything like that. But like if Watsy's out later than normal, like the boys will be like, we want to wait on Watsy to get home to have dinner together.
Yeah, it is kind of a culture
and
now.
So, yeah, it's cool. Kind of a culture in our house. And we don't do that. I mean, we are not like 7 nights a week all at the table all at the same time. Like we're crazy. And
going places all the time, and so, but just kind of prioritizing that as much as we can, I feel like it's really important. And like having a conversation at the dinner table is important. And like some of my like absolute most favorite memories in the world are like the time that we spend at the table together.
Yeah, I've learned, it's funny, like when I try to have conversations with our kids, it never works. But when we're all just together and hanging out and eating dinner or playing a board game or something, stuff just starts coming out. It just starts flowing out of them. And so time, I think, is I'm the king of, like, let's have a conversation. You know?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And we also do, like, little things throughout the year that have kind of become, like...
Traditions,
yeah. With our kids, that are just kind of like intentional time.
No, it's like, really funny. Like, there's one thing Whitney does. I don't think you'll tell it like this, so I'm going to interrupt. Called Spooky Night that we do right around Halloween every year.
Yeah.
Spooky Night for our kids has become like a thing. Like, Whitney started it. And we decorate for Halloween and watch like The Great Pumpkin and like one of the Toy Story short movies. And I don't know.
It's just like dumb.
Eat pizza and, I mean, I wouldn't say zero. Like, but
you know,
I don't know. Anyway. Those decorations are, anyway, they cost money. But,
so much
money. Long story short, though.
Charlie Brown Thanksgiving.
I love this. This is like the biggest win. It was like the biggest win for us that we've had in a long time that I feel like is reflective of having a strategy for this kind of stuff. Is that we're talking about having Speaking Night, and Watsy was going to work something before a game, and then she got invited to stay at the game with all her friends, and she's like, I want y'all to come get me. And we were like, why don't you go to the game? She's like, I want to be home for Spooky Night. Like, I don't want to miss Spooky Night. I was like, man, she's almost 14 and wants to be home. And she's got a robust social life beyond us. And we're great with that, too. But I thought, man, that's a culture win, for us.
And I had another person that's a dear friend of mine, and I both kind of, their kids are, they have three boys, and they're kind of wrestling with, like, this family time stuff, and like their kids are growing up, and you know, they're like 14 to 8. And he said that they really had to reset recently to where it's kind of become, it used to be just like a quantity of time, just like they're always little, they're always at home, they're always around, you're doing everything with them, everything all the time. But now it's kind of drifted to a quality of time, and that's kind of the transition that you have to make, right? When your kids grow up, and so. Like, don't ever look at, like, how much... I mean, it is important to spend physical time with your kids. Like the amount of time you spend, of course, is important. But quality of time is just as important, I think.
Yeah. So, strategy for the big stuff. Faith, kids, money. Again, there are spenders and there are savers. Generally speaking, it's not a sin to save money. It's not a sin to spend money, okay? We've done both this week. I mean, you know, like, and so both are very important at different levels. Obviously, I think maybe more than anything else, we tend to moralize our relationship to money vis-a-vis our spouses. So people that are spenders are like sending you the Instagram thing that's like, take the trip or whatever, you know? And the people that are savers are like, I'm sorry, but we can't just spend every dime we've got on all the stuff, you know, or what? Yeah, right, yeah. Like, you know, like sending, you know, stories about they people agree. Being indigent or something. And so
yeah.
So I think both are important, and I think there's biblical precedent for both, right?
Yeah.
Like, you can fill up storehouse after storehouse after storehouse with all your money, and then the Lord may take you home, and what good is it then, you know? Or you may spend it all and wind up not having enough money to live on, and that's not good either, you know? And so I think that's important then to have a strategy. We're joint bank account people. I'm not, like, religious about it, but I think it's wise. It's our. But even if you don't have a joint bank account, it's our money. It's all our money.
Yeah.
And... as a married couple, I think that's a Dave Ramsey thing too. I think it's our money. He's an our money guy, so it's all our money, whether both spouses work or not. Because we've been in both seasons, you know, where Whitney was not working outside the home, and where Whitney is now working outside the home, and so we've been in both seasons. And so it wasn't like
well, I guess you ought to get a job if you want to buy decorations for Spooky Night. You know,
it wasn't like that. It was our money. It's our money, you know. And she made it possible for me to do what I did, 100%, at tons of levels. So having a strategy for money, I think, is really important. How are we going to save? What are our priorities on spending? You know, I think everybody has different priorities on what we spend money on, you know. And there are things that Whitney wants to spend money on that I'm like, that's the goofiest thing I've ever heard. And then I come to her and I'm like, I really need this golf club, you know. And she's like,
okay.
That's the goofiest thing I've ever heard in my life, you know. And so you never know. But then what has helped us, though, is just having an overarching strategy. And then when we're trying to prioritize, like, okay, this has come up. This is something I think I want to do. And I'll say, that's great. But, you know, we say this to ourselves. I say this to our kids. A dollar spent on one thing is a dollar we can't spend on another. And so I remember when we were, like, working on budget stuff at one point, Whitney was like, well, what if I need to buy some clothes or whatever? And I was like, well, that'll come out of this line. She's like, well, that's not fair. You know, because, or like, what if the kids need, like, if they need clothes, they need clothes. I'm like, I agree, it's not fair, but I'm just saying there's nowhere else. Like, this is just the money we have. I mean, you know, I don't know, there's not some other place to go get money, you know, it's just, this is it. So, like, if we spend a dollar on this, we can't spend a dollar on that, you know? And so we think about that a lot and talk about that a lot and just say, okay, you know, we have a finite amount of resources that God's given us, and how are we going to strategize generosity, saving, wise purchasing, all those different kind of things. So is that a all right? And careers, I mean, you know, my career is our career, her career is our career, and we're unique in that. I think we have a unique career thing that we chose early on for my career to have the vocational priority for our household. That I'm called to be a pastor, and therefore we understood that meant that our home was called to be a pastor's home, and that we were going to give my calling to the pastorate a higher priority than any other callings in the household.
Yeah.
Is that?
Yeah.
So that's unique for us, but at the same time, these are things, if over the years when there have been opportunities and things like that, these are things decisions we made together. And we have a strategy about those things. And so, same with Whitney's career. We've strategized about, frankly, Whitney's career. One high priority for us has been building a meaningful quality of life in Gadsden long term. Something we felt a sense of calling to. So, and that's partly my calling to pastor here, but also just our love for the community and desire to live here.
Yeah.
And so we've really worked toward Whitney's career serving that strategy over time. We thought about that a lot. And so that was a lot of the decisions we made were rooted in that. Does that make sense? Okay. So strategy of the big stuff, money, career, and then communication. Communication is a big thing. I know it might sound like it's not, but communication is a big thing. And so having a communication strategy in your marriage is important. Whitney and I like to talk at very different times. Mm-hmm. All the time and very rarely. And so, no, I'm just kidding, no. Like, I'm a big, like, lay in the bed at night, let's start talking kind of person. Not Whitney at all. That's the worst idea ever. It's a terrible idea. And, but what I'll tell you, we do well in the car.
We're side by side talkers.
Yeah.
Some
people are better face to face talkers. We're better side by side talkers. We've learned over time. So I know that sounds weird, but it's just true.
Y'all sit on the same side of the booth in restaurants.
We do not do that.
We don't talk at restaurants.
Whitney doesn't talk at restaurants. I chatter the whole time, and Whitney doesn't say anything.
Our seats in the living room.
Yeah, we sit side by side. But we do well in the car.
We always go to the same side as the restaurants.
Yeah, yeah. Not that there's anything wrong with that, right? But we don't.
They're maybe.
But we're good in the car. So it's funny because, like, our kids' friends will like, not tease him, but they'll say, I think like one of Watsy's friends one time was like, your parents like do school drop off in the mornings together. Like that's so cute or something, you know? And like, we've had people mention that from time to time. And like for us, that's like maybe the best time of the day for us to just like talk and figure out what the day's going to look like, all that different kind of stuff. So it's kind of part of our, it's really a strategy for communication.
That's right. Yep.
That over time we've had to figure out how we talk best. And so that's a good time for that. Okay. Strategize the big stuff. So humility for you, for ourselves, focusing on the positive, strategizing the big stuff. Oh man. We'll move quickly through this one. Number four, invest in your marriage.
You can probably skip this because you've covered a bunch of that.
Well, I can't skip it. But all right. It'll be quick, though.
Okay.
It'll be quick.
I just want to say it.
No, you say all you want, baby. Come on. invest in your marriage. So we've talked a lot about strategizing the big stuff, but I'll just say, like, having a plan and having a purposeful way to invest in your marriage is really, really, really important. So some people, we're not going to be prescriptive about this. I'm not a lot, you have to do this so often or whatever. And for some people, investing in their marriage means going on trips with their children too, right? I'm not anti any of those kind of things. For us, we really value time to ourselves from time to time, you know? So I do strongly suggest trips. And it does not have to be expensive, okay? It does not have to be, and it can even be like a staycation or something like that. Send the kids to the grandparents to stay home for the weekend. But just time alone, I think, is really important for tons of reasons. But just long periods of time, uninterrupted with each other, is helpful, I think. Dates, I think some level of dates is good. We, when our kids were real little, we could do it once a week with no problems at all. It's not like that now. Sometimes date night for the week is car drop off and pick up, you know, just that's our time to, or I might come home and eat lunch, and that's kind of the time, or we'll run out to eat lunch during the week or something like that, or I'll come home and have a coffee in the afternoon, like literally something like that might be date night for the week. But then sometimes we do try to, you know, have time and we'll go out to eat. We personally usually go to Birmingham for that, for date night. And the simple reason for that is, this is going to sound real braggy, but it's really not. But like if we're in Gadsden going out to eat, I'm going to be kind of working the room a little bit.
Not me.
I'm just going to know a lot of
folks. We went to Pruitt's one night on date night.
It wasn't a date night, you know? It was great. I had a blast.
So did I.
And Whitney looked at her phone while she ate, you know. In other words, though, like for us, you know, just getting out and really
church people either.
Yeah, really just being able to, like, see each other, you know, and focus in is good. And it just feels fun, you know? It just feels fun to do something different. Conversations, like talking is important. Small fun things. I don't even know what I was thinking about there, but I don't know. Just little fun stuff. Do that.
Do small fun stuff.
And I'm going to say this. Intentionality with intimacy, I think, is really important. The Bible says, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and say it. The Bible says not to deprive your spouse of their conjugal rights, you know, not to deprive your spouse from sex. Unless it's for a particular purpose, like a season of prayer or something like that. So I do think it's an important part of investing in your marriage is to make that a priority. You know, we've already talked about sex, but I do want to make it clear that I do think that's important to have some level reasonable availability to your spouse. Is that a fair way for me to say that? You agree a lot, or?
I told you, I was like, the same thing.
What level of agreement are we talking here?
ABCD.
Is it like a tonight type agreement, or like a? All right. Okay. It's
my birthday.
It's your birthday. In other words, that's on me. Yeah. All right.
November 6th.
So invest, you know, invest in your marriage. That looks different for different people. You know, and there are seasons of life too. Okay, there are seasons of life. There are seasons where all these things are a lot harder. You only get so much time with the kids at home and all those different kind of things. There are seasons. So we're not trying to be judgmental if everybody's not doing this. But I will also say, if you think about it, if you're married for your whole life, that season is a pretty short season, and it's important to maintain your marriage so that, I mean, a lot of marriages fall apart when the kids leave the house because they just functioned as
mom and dad.
Mom and dad, that was it. We weren't still married. So I do think it's important to recognize that as important as kids are, and we think they're very important and love them and thankful for them, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's also important to be married during that season as well, because one day they won't be there and you're going to be in a house together, you know, and there's just only so many movies you're going to want to go watch or whatever, and you're going to have to be alone together in a house at some point, you know, and we tell our kids all the time, they're always like, are you guys going to be so sad when we leave? I'm like, we're going to be medium sad, because we're going to kill it as empty nesters. Like, we're going to have so much fun. Like, we're just going to have a blast. I'm going to cook whatever the heck I want. You don't have to worry about their little palates, their little unsophisticated palates. It's going to be great, you know? And so, and there will be Mumsy.
Right there in the middle of it, you know? It's like, Mumsy, go to bed. You know,
yeah.
I'm just kidding. So investing in your marriage is important, and I highly suggest, I really think getaways are the best thing for us.
Yeah.
Sometimes we'll be like just kind of just bristling. I kind of say we're just kind of like hitting each other's shoulders on the way by a little bit, you know, like just kind of, you know, like just kind of like deal with it, you know, and just not quite. It's just off a little.
It's off.
And it's like we'll say like, and sometimes it's literally one night.
Yeah.
We'll go to Birmingham or Atlanta or wherever for one, literally just like one night sometimes, and and just got to eat and just reconnect, you know, and get away, get out of it all, and remember why you love each other. All right, last stay. Okay, this is my PSA, my public service announcement. Stay ahead of the problems. If you wait, a lot of people wait till it's too late to deal with problems in their marriage. And I've had a lot of times people show up to me when it's like the house is on fire. You know what I mean? It reminds me one time, this one lady's with the Lord, so I think I can tell the story now. There are these folks in our old church, priest church, that just would go through seasons where they didn't have enough money to cover everything. And they ran out of food one time. So they called me, and this was not like here where I have kind of some leeway on spending and things like that. I mean, we voted on every single expenditure at this church and business meeting. Mm-hmm. So they call me and they're like, "Hey, listen, we're out of food." And I'm like, "You mean like out of food?" They're like, "Yeah, we have half a bag of frozen French fries left." I was like, "Couldn't you call me when it was full so I have a little time to deal with this, you know?" In other words, don't wait until the frozen French fries are halfway full to call somebody, okay? It was like you kind of had to know this was coming. You know what I'm trying to say? Like call me. Please let me know a little bit sooner. And so sometimes I think it's important, you know, like go get your oil changed before the check engine light comes on. You know what I mean? And get ahead of maintenance. So commit to genuine, open conversation about problems. Not nagging each other and pestering each other, but having genuine, open conversation about problems and dealing with them. And then also commit to dealing with these things through the Lord. And you know, there are resources. You guys are all using one. You're coming to a marriage class, right? So that's important. I'm available for counseling. Woody's available for counseling. Like, we're here for those kinds of things. If you need somebody to talk to, if you're like, "I don't want people thinking that we've got marriage problems," I'll meet you at night. You know what I mean? I'll come to your house. I've done all these things before. You know what I mean? We'll do whatever if you're worried about that. But if it is way down the line, still try to get help. But if you need somebody to talk to, that's what we're here for, right? And nobody's going to be like, you're kidding me, right? Why are you coming to come talk to me for? Is it that bad? No, we're going to be like, praise God. Like, we've had to talk to people before. Like, talk before it gets too bad. And then have close friends and confidants, you know, that if you have a problem developing that you can talk to, work some things out like that. And then also, don't be afraid to seek counseling if you need counseling. And it might not be a bad idea to just get a tune-up every now and again. You know what I mean? And just dip in, see how things are going. You know what I mean? And get in the trust tree and see how things are going. And so I think it's important to stay ahead of the problem. So to me, like, maybe the most practical thing we can do is stay ahead of our marriage issues and not let them fester, not let them turn into forest fires. Deal with them while they're manageable. So just call when the bag of frozen French fries is still full, okay? Mm-hmm. Don't let it get down to half a bag. All right. Anything to add to that, Whit? Nope. Anything to add to that, party people? Here, I'm going to turn this off.